He will faithfully heal our wounds and renew our hope if we can trust him to meet our deepest needs. You see, with him, brokenness can turn to blessing, and the hurts of a family can be healed through Jesus Christ.
Welcome to Mission 66 from the ministry of Pastor Luis Seau and Transworld Radio. Today, we're diving into 2 Samuel, King David's triumphs, struggles, and lessons in faith, leadership, and God's guidance. Grab your study guide at mission66.org and follow along with John Matthews and Esther Sisulu as we discover how these timeless stories speak into our lives today. Let's get started.
Welcome to our fascinating journey in the Bible as we read along chapter by chapter with our teacher, John Matthews. Now, in our look through 2 Samuel, we found that King David had sinned with Bathsheba and had had her husband killed in battle to cover up an unwanted pregnancy. Now, David subsequently married Bathsheba and was forgiven by God, but that really didn't stop the series of unintended consequences. Now, today's episode is themed, Family Takes Priority.
Esther, thank you so much, and great to be with you all, and great to be here for this latest episode of Mission 66. A very, very warm welcome wherever you join us from today. It is so good to have your company. And we've got a bit of ground to cover today, so let's dive straight in. And just a reminder of where we've been in the recent couple of episodes, because we're starting to see here in 2 Samuel the consequences of David's sin with Bathsheba. And those consequences were that, and this was a word that came from Nathan the prophet, and he said this would happen, and this is what we're seeing happening. They were those consequences, that the sword would never depart from David's house. So let's listen then to this story of Absalom and all of the problems that he's now causing in David's kingdom. Absalom, this man of rebellion and conspiracy, in chapter 14 here on Mission 66, says that Joab, the son of Zeruiah, knew that the king's heart longed for Absalom. So Joab sent someone to Tekoa and had a wise woman brought from there. And he said to her, "Pretend you are in mourning, dress in mourning clothes, and don't use any cosmetic lotions. Act like a woman who has spent many days grieving for the dead. Then go to the king and speak these words to him." And Joab put the words in her mouth. Now, as we know, Joab is one of the most important military leaders in the Davidic reign. And here he's beginning to interfere in the relationship between the king and his son Absalom. Perhaps he was concerned with the succession of the king, believing that Absalom should be present there as a possible successor. Some scholars think that could be it, but here he's trying to end the enmity between them. So what does Joab do? Well, we see he finds this woman who was basically an actress. She pretends to be a woman in mourning, and she's going to try to mess with the king's emotions, appealing to his mercy, telling him that she has only one son left who survived a fight between brothers and that he was going to trial for having killed the other brother. Now the trial has decided that he too will be killed for his murder. So with this whole discussion, this complex situation, she asks for David's help. And as we continue looking at the dialogue here, we see that the woman is desperate and she's performing these theatrics. And the king says to her in verse 10, the king replies, it says, "If anyone says anything to you, bring them to me and they will not bother you again." She said, "Then let the king invoke the Lord his God to prevent the avenger of blood from adding to the destruction so that my son will not be destroyed. As surely as the Lord lives," he said, "not one hair of your son's head will fall to the ground." Then the woman said, "Let your servant speak a word to my lord the king." "Speak," he replied. And then she begins to reveal her true intentions in all of this. She says, "Why then have you devised a thing like this against the people of God? When the king says this, does he not convict himself? For the king has not brought back his banished son. Like water spilled on the ground, which cannot be recovered, so we must die. But that is not what God desires. Rather, he devises ways so that a banished person does not remain banished from him." And so King David begins to see what is really going on here and says, "Isn't the hand of Joab with you in all this?" And so Joab, using this woman, is able to partially calm David's wrath towards the condemnable deeds of his son Absalom in such a way that David allows Absalom to come back. Now, Absalom had run away to Geshur, which is in Syria. So the Bible tells us that Joab went there and he brought Absalom back. But David did not want Absalom in his presence. He remained there, living in the city, but David didn't want to see him. And the Bible says Absalom lived 2 years in Jerusalem without seeing the king's face. Then Absalom sent for Joab in order to send him to the king, but Joab refused to come to him. So he sent a second time, but Joab refused to come. Then he said to his servants, "Look, Joab's field is next to mine. He has barley there. Go and set it on fire." So Absalom's servants set the field on fire. And with this disturbing news, Absalom is then going to try to talk to Joab, saying, "Look, I just wanted to talk to you to see if you could get me before the king." And everything the prophet Nathan had said is now starting to take place in the course of history in ancient Israel during David's reign. And things are going to get complicated and difficult. The family situation is going to start crumbling in this new context. And with this situation established, Joab's trying to help. He's trying to bring the family together. But things are getting even more complex as Absalom starts making room for himself. And when we reach chapter 15, it says this: "In the course of time, Absalom provided himself with a chariot and horses and with 50 men to run ahead of him. He would get up early and stand by the side of the road leading to the city gate. And whenever anyone came with a complaint to be placed before the king for a decision, Absalom would call out to him, 'What town are you from?' And he would answer, 'Your servant is from one of the tribes of Israel.' Then Absalom would say to him, 'Look, your claims are valid and proper, but there is no representative of the king to hear you.'" And so here, Absalom, a bit of an opportunist, sees an opportunity and he begins investing in the population. And we observe something incredible here. The Bible shows us that, on the contrary of what we might imagine, that maybe David had great problems with the great foreign potencies around him when it came to trying to establish peace in Israel. But it was David, who we know was so strong and capable of winning wars and achieving victory, even against his mighty enemies, the Philistines. So all that was taken care of. The real rot, the real problem, began inside David's own home, in his family relationships. And these are things that David, it seems from what we read, did not know how to deal with. And so the situation gets worse with Absalom. He doesn't have a way of resolving it. And Absalom, well, look, from what we can understand, his character is not righteous. He doesn't even try to behave appropriately, and he's now trying to conspire within David's kingdom. And Absalom is beginning to say, "Look, if only I were appointed judge in the land, I would bring you justice. I would bring justice for everyone." So he's manipulating here. He's a true populist politician. And the Bible tells us that he behaved in this way towards all the Israelites who had come to the king asking for justice, in a way that he was slowly stealing the hearts of the people of Israel. And at the end of 4 years, Absalom said to the king, "Let me go to Hebron and fulfill a vow I made to the Lord. While your servant was living at Geshur in Aram, I made this vow. If the Lord takes me back to Jerusalem, I will worship the Lord in Hebron." Then Absalom sent secret messengers throughout the tribes of Israel to say, "As soon as you hear the sound of the trumpets, then say, 'Absalom is king in Hebron.'" And 200 men from Jerusalem had accompanied Absalom. They'd been invited as guests, and they went quite innocently, knowing nothing about the matter. And while Absalom was offering sacrifices, he also sends for Ahithophel, the Gilonite, David's counsellor, to come from Gilo, his hometown. And so the conspiracy was gaining strength, and Absalom's following kept on increasing. And we see effectively a coup d'etat, an attempt to overthrow his father, to overthrow the government, is taking place. This man who is the son of the king is making room for himself. And we learn that he's a man of incredibly good looks. Verse 25 of chapter 14 says, "In all of Israel, there was not a man so highly praised for his handsome appearance as Absalom. From the top of his head to the sole of his foot, there was no blemish in him." But despite outward appearances, inwardly, the weakness of David's family is showing. The problems derived from David's own sin start showing up. And so you have this dangerous coup on its way.
This is Mission 66, and this incredible program is heard around the world each day in several different languages. And dear friend, we want to thank you so much for your generous prayers and your generous support of this ministry. And that way we are able to share more of God's word into the world. But if you would like to partner with us in prayer and financial support, please do visit mission66.org to make a gift to the ministry today. Thank you so much. And once again, God bless you. Well, you know, we've heard quite a bit from this particular chapter here on Mission 66. And so let's get into some questions with John. Now, first up, John, what does this name Absalom mean in Hebrew?
Well, I said there may be a degree of irony in this because it actually means father of peace. Now, I guess that, what does that say to us? I suppose it means we shouldn't put too much trust in what somebody is called or what indeed we are called. You know, sometimes you'll hear people say today, won't you? "Oh, my name brings bad luck. Ugh, my name causes me problems. I need to change my name." Look, the name that we're given by our parents is the name that we're known by, but our character is something entirely different. And, it's our character that speaks for us, you know, regardless of the character that we exhibit.
Yeah, I had to take a little chuckle at that because it is kind of ironic, isn't it? Wow. All right. Well, you know, this whole episode, at least with regards to it, what do you think Joab's motivation was when he brought the wise woman of Tekoa into the whole scene?
Do you know what my name means?
Tell me. What does it mean?
It means he whose teeth falls out when he speaks sometimes. No, I'm only joking. It could have been. That would be quite close to the truth, perhaps. But no. So look, in answer to your question, I think, Joab had good intentions. He's trying to bring the two, father and son, closer together. Perhaps, as we've suggested, he was also pretty concerned about the succession of the throne, especially since the eldest son, Amnon, well, he was no longer in the picture. Joab then thinks, what about Absalom? He's trying to make him perhaps more visible in Israel. And so, look, I think we can safely say Joab is well-meaning, and he devises this way for Absalom to return, and David goes along with it. But we soon find as the chapter goes on that it's all pretty superficial. And so there was no genuine reconciliation. Absalom didn't care about David, and David, it seems, didn't have the stomach or the resolve to sort and settle the issues with his son. And why that happened, we don't know, but there was just a bit of a miss between the two of them. Sometimes that happens if we can't resolve some deeper issues. Perhaps we don't really know. And, you know, sometimes forcing a situation, as I guess Joab, well-meaning though he is trying to do here, doesn't help. You can't make people do what they ought to do or what you think that they should do unless they are minded in their heart to do that. And we know, don't we, that only God can change somebody's heart.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I think we're getting to the heart of, you know, familial dynamics and some of the complications that may arise. And just on that, you know, David seems to accept Absalom's return, but I don't know, he was somewhat reluctant about it, right? Because he said the words, well, he can come back, but let him go to his own house. You know, he says, I don't want to see his face. And again, making reference to the point that we see that there might be a lack of heart there in David's disposition.
Yeah, it's almost as though he listens to Joab and he thinks that is the right thing to do to welcome him back. But in welcoming him back, he keeps distance with him, doesn't he? He says, you can come back, but I don't want to see you. So it kind of defeats the point of him coming back in a way. And then Absalom returns and the passage says, you know, he doesn't see David for 2 years. So maybe during that period, he's stewing and bitterness is growing. And then we see him, you know, his attitude deteriorate to the extent that to get Joab's attention, he burns down his barley field. It's pretty extreme stuff. And so in a sense, he's almost, you know, like a spoiled child there who's throwing a tantrum a little bit, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely trying to get his father's attention. Okay, I think a lot of us can relate to some degree, you know, with this whole family dynamic. So let's just suppose for a moment, John, that you were a family counselor, okay? And King David comes to you looking for advice on how to repair, you know, these unraveled threads of his family. What kind of advice would you offer to this father?
First of all, in answering the question, it's a highly skilled thing to be a family counsellor, and I'm certainly not that, Esther. But look, what I can do is share a little bit of wisdom which comes from an article from Focus on the Family here, and it's answers the question far better than I could. So let me share this with you. And this article says, look, we need to be honest about our own character defects and throw off the behaviours of the flesh and surrender to God, allowing him to grow the fruits of spirit in us. And when it comes to our family members and our children in particular, that is true. And there are 3 points that are made here. One is meet their needs. We need to abide in Christ daily so that he can love and care for them. That's our children, our family members, through us. When we care for our children, we're also ministering to the heart of God. So meet their needs. 2, teach them. We need to show and teach our children how to trust God and pray so that they too are able to lay their burdens at the feet of Jesus, who in John chapter 14 says, I will not leave you as orphans. I will come to you. So 2, teach them. And 3, let God work. He will faithfully heal our wounds and renew our hope if we trust him to meet our deepest needs. With him, brokenness can turn to blessing, and the hurts of a family can be healed through Jesus Christ. And so it's his work to change generational patterns of behaviour. It's our work to be willing and to do the things that he leads us to do.
I think that's a really great answer. And it kind of leads me to the fact that, you know, although David was this great military leader, you know, he excelled in that department or in that part of his life. It does seem that he, of course, was having struggles with his family and with his children. And this is why a lot of the division was happening.
children, you know, ultimately have to know that they are safe with us, their parents, don't they? And they need to feel understood. They need to know that we are behind them, we are for them. And so, yes, as parents, it's important to create boundaries. And, you know, another word for those boundaries would be discipline. But that needs to be balanced with mercy. And I think, you know, that it's a very different approach when you approach a child and saying, I want the best for you. God wants the best for you. We're with you. That's a very different approach than saying, you need to do this. You're not good enough at this. You need to improve at this. You let me down here. Now, those things may well be true, but if they're the first thing that you approach a child with, it creates a defense. So I'd suggest maybe flopping those things around. So the first thing you do is you approach with an open heart and saying, look, we're for you. And there are consequences if you do things a certain way. So I think the way that we approach parenting and our tone is so important here, Esther.
I think that is something to really take to heart, John, because when you look at the bitterness brewing between David and Absalom, Absalom now makes this decision to start plotting against his father. He starts plotting a coup. Do you think that David was aware of what his son was up to?
No, I don't think he saw it coming. And it might raise the question as well, Esther, what might have happened if David had shown real grace and real forgiveness? And when he came back, didn't keep him at arm's length for those 2 years, but actually said, come in, my son. Sit with me, like a little bit like the story of the prodigal son, you know. What would have happened had King David responded that way and set a different tone? Well, look, we do not know. But look, that's a slight divergence to the question you've asked. Did he see it coming? And I don't think so, because later we find out that David really did love Absalom, which makes this tragedy even worse and makes it even harder to understand why he didn't welcome him back when he had the opportunity to do so. But yet life can be like that sometimes, right? But the reality is David hasn't seen the worst of this part of his life and this relationship with his son Absalom yet.
Mm. Wow. Yeah, this is quite complicated, I think. But hey, I look forward to hearing more about the story and the lessons that we can learn from it. And just on that note, John, how can we summarize what we've learned in chapters 14 and 15?
Yeah, well, our theme, Esther, today was family takes priority. And we, you know, we're still witnessing the fallout of David's sin and its impact on his household. There seems to be a hardness of heart on and off between David and his son Absalom, which at this, well, certainly from the passage we've just read, makes it really hard or impossible for them to really connect again. And David's son Absalom, well, he's killed his brother Amnon. He's fled, and then he later conspires to take David's throne to usurp his father. But Joab intervenes, using a wise woman from Tekoa to confront David, urging this reconciliation. And Absalom is, as a result of that, allowed to return. But genuine healing and forgiveness and grace, well, that is absent completely from what we've just read. And so it only leads to further conflict, unresolved issues, a lack of boundaries, a lack of discipline, superficial solutions, a lack of forgiveness and love. And what is love in this situation? It's certainly not a feeling. Love in this situation would have been perhaps something we would call loving against the odds, choosing to love rather than feeling to love. True reconciliation, it needs people to address problems with love, with biblical guidance, with grace, with humility, with a willingness to listen when you don't feel like listening. And David's story reminds us that family relationships, well, they need to be nurtured and prioritized, certainly over personal and our own ambitions.
Well, thanks for that, John. And thank you, dear friends, for joining us for today's episode. Hey, perhaps what you've heard today has touched upon a familial relationship that you may be prompted to want to address and fix with love and through love. Well, we would love to hear all about it and perhaps provide you some resources. Connect with us on our Facebook page or on Instagram. Simply search us at Mission 66, and there you can leave your comment, you can ask your question, and if you have a testimony to share, we would love to see it. Looking forward to interacting with you there. Well, friend, that's all we have for you today here on Mission 66. We'll continue next time as we look further into the book of 2 Samuel. So from me, Esther, from John and our team, saying goodbye and God bless you.
As Mission 66 comes to a close, be sure to download your free study guide at mission66.org. Deepen your daily devotion with insights from each episode and let John and Esther lead you through the scriptures. Get your study guide at mission66.org and be prepared for our next episode. There, you can also connect with us, ask questions, or donate to help Mission 66's worldwide outreach. Head to mission66.org. Mission 66 is made possible through Transworld Radio in partnership with Dr. Luis Seau.